Okay, so we'll learn was first before Shleima for Rav Yehuda ben Rivka Leah tonight. So if you look at the Makoros, you'll notice that they're very strange because it's just psukim. There's no Rashi, there's no anything. I want to try to take a look at the psukim of the story of Dina. I think it's been a couple of years since we did take a look at it and try to understand a little bit what's going on in the story. There's a lot of backstory to I think, the story of Dina. And to really fully appreciate it, you would have to go back to the end of Vayetze and watch how Yaakov interacts with Lavan and then how Yaakov interacts with Esav. And I think there's a really good question to wonder over the course of Shabbos, and that question would really be, why is it that Yaakov even wastes his time on Esav? Like, it's so strange. I mean, besides the fact that, like, from a traveling perspective, right, like to go through Esav to get back home, like, it's just out of the way. What's the purpose? And then he goes, but like it's a weird dance because he's like, Esav, I'm ready. And then he's like, forget, I'm leaving. And then he wrestles with the angel and then he leaves and then he talks to Esav. The whole thing is really, really bizarre. But I think it certainly gives a little bit of a sense as to what's going on with Dina. So we're not going to be able to go into all of that because that would take us far longer than the time that we have. But I would highly recommend over Shabbos trying to see what the connection is, if you can. So when we start this story should feel a little bit like a throwback. It's a throwback to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu makes the same journey. He starts up in Haran, and where's his first stop? So, as I believe, it's in Shechem. Right? So he ends up in Shechem, and then he builds a Mizbeach there, and then he goes down, and then he ends up settling, and then he goes to Egypt, and then he comes back. So that's the same journey that Yaakov takes, except that Yaakov stays in Shechem a lot longer. He buys property, which is a really big deal. It's the first time that he's going to acquire land in Israel. And it's more of a significant purchase on some level than Abraham with Maaros HaMachpelah because it's like livable property. But he messes up because God told him to go home. And he doesn't. He spends a year and a half in Sukkot, and then afterwards he spends more time in Shechem. Like, why doesn't he just go home? So Yaakov has been transforming since the end of Vayetze, and he believes that at this point in time he's ready for like the big leagues, and that's when the story starts off. So Vateitze Dina bat Leah asher yaldal Yaakov l'ro pivno taretz. Dina bat, the daughter of Leah, who was born to Yaakov, goes out to see the girls of the land. Just completely, this is like totally off topic, but like, it's a funny like footnote here. So today I walked into a class and they were reviewing the first perek or so of Vayishlach. And the teacher goes, you know, which of Yaakov's kids did not greet Esav like everyone else? And of course the answer was Dina. And he says, why didn't Dina do that? Because Dina was in the box. So I texted Malki, who teaches fourth grade also, and I was like, do you really teach Dina in the box? And she's like, well, you sort of have to, because like it's a pretty famous Rashi. She's like, but I don't really love it. So I texted her back. I was like, well, there's got to be a different reason why Dina is not mentioned there, other than the fact that she's a girl and it doesn't matter, and she doesn't matter, right? Which probably somewhere is one of the answers. So the answer that she found was that Dina was a girl, and girls don't like to separate from their mothers, and therefore she and her mother were like one and the same, and that's why she's not listed there. And I didn't have a chance to text Malki back, but like there's a big question on that shot, and that's this pasuk right here. If in fact that's true, then why is she going out by herself? I mean, I guess the answer is she's 2 years older, I guess. So she goes out to see the Benot Aretz. Vayaro Tashchem ben Chamor Achivi Nesia Aretz. Vaykachu Tavishkabo Tavayaneha. So Shchem, the son of Chamor, Hachivi, interesting that a chivi is a snake and a chamor is a donkey. Just, you know, interesting how that plays out. Who's the Nesi Haaretz, the prince of the land? He takes her, he sleeps with her, and he abuses her. But he likes her, and he loves her, and he speaks to the heart of the girl. Now Rashi points out that this is in contrast to Amnon, who rapes his sister, and then afterwards she's like, just marry me because, like, at least you'll spare me the shame. And he's like, get out of my face, right? Like, I don't want to see you ever again. But, like, somehow he actually really likes her. So Shechem turns to his father and says, take for me this girl as a wife. Like, you know, it's funny, I never noticed that. It's kachliat hayalda. It's like a little bit like uncomfortable, right? But okay, I want to marry this girl. That's what he says. So what happens? It says, V'yakov shama ki timei dina bito, ubanav ayu mikneu basadeh, v'achirish Yaakov ad boam. Yaakov hears that Dina was defiled, his daughter, and his sons are out in the field with the animals, and v'achirish Yaakov ad boam. Yaakov is quiet until they come back. Now that pasuk, or those four words, "Ve'achrish Yaakov ad bo'am," are really, really packed. Because the first question we're going to have to try to figure out tonight is, why is Yaakov silent? So what do you think?
It's Bas Leah.
Right, so one possibility is, of course he's silent. It's Bas Leah. She doesn't really matter, right? If she was Bat Rachel, holy cow, he would have been out guns blazing. But because it was Bat Leah's, whatever. Okay. Now that's one possibility. The other possibility is that that's not what he really thought, but that's what was perceived.
Yaakov was also a non-confrontational guy. He needed to have his back up against the wall, i.e. like Lavan.
Okay.
That's the only time he really responds head on. For the most part, he's a, let me not confront right now. Let me regroup.
Okay.
He's out, man.
Huh?
Right.
He's outmanned. So? There's a whole town of these people, and
right.
It's only him.
Yes.
Think about it, confrontational.
Right.
At least when I get my posse together, it's like now we're equal in numbers.
All right, so we...
Reaction now, and after Shimon Levi decimates Shechem, is very similar. I mean, he's just waiting, he's biding his time. He's not...
Yeah, but it's not similar. Here he's quiet. There he gets mad at them.
Well, I think Steve probably means that after they respond back, right? He gets mad at them, and then they respond back and say, oh, really? And then the story kind of closes out, goes to commercial break, and you're thinking, like, why doesn't he respond? Okay.
What was he supposed to do until they got back?
Right. So there's three possible ways to look at this. One is, like Sirli said, he's apathetic, he doesn't care. Then there's Henry's point of, it's sort of a weakness on his part, right? Like, he's not strong enough, he's not confrontational enough. That's another possibility. And the third possibility, which was, not sure, but it came from that corner, is that he's just waiting for his backup, right? Okay.
I mean, it's just a terrible situation.
Very
really
difficult.
Bad news. And they make the point of saying quite in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Okay. That's fair. And with Aaron, we also wonder, like, why is he quiet? So here, I think Rabbi Grummet gives us basically all three of those possibilities. Weakness, apathy, or he's waiting for his boy.
I
don't see the parallels.
You watched with your own eyes this incredible miracle that God performed in taking your two children with a divine fire.
I agree.
And you're stunned.
Yeah, right.
And here, it's like, I don't know if he's stunned. I think he's... I mean, I guess in a way he's stunned. He's lost of words, but... But words is not what they're looking for. Bidom Aaron was words.
Are you agreeing with me or not agreeing with
me? No, I don't agree with you.
I'm saying I can't draw the parallel.
There's just silence. There, in both cases, there's silence.
Right.
Does Yaakov have any relationship with you at home? I mean, besides...
He fathered her.
No, I'm saying like a personal relationship.
Beyond the biological.
You know, because what you were saying about the fact that she's Bas-Leia, you know, he has a very tense relationship with Leia, and this is a girl, so he's like
just like her mother. Supposedly,
I just don't know what to do with her.
Right. So I mean, I don't know. We know so little about the dynamic between the Avos. There's an interesting book that came out not that long ago by Nechama Price. That's basically, it's a very cool thing she did. I think that a lot of it in there we've done together over the years, is that she takes each of the 12 Shvatim and she takes everything that we know about them and develops their personality to the fullest. And then, which is really the fascinating part, is she then shows you how it like is able to carry through Tanakh. So the biblical Reuven, because of his whole mindset, like impacts the Shevet of Reuven. Like they often mirror like the Avos, or their Avos rather. It's actually pretty cool. But the problem with that is that she gets a sum of them where like she just lumps like three or four of them together. She's like, I don't know. We don't really know much about them, certainly on the Pshat level. Maybe midrashically we have some stuff. I don't know what the relationship is with Dina. One of the Rishonim, I remember we did this years ago, talks about how like the brothers did look and say like, Dad doesn't care because this is like, it's just Dina. And if it was someone else, Dad would be much more concerned.
You mean not that was just Dina, that was Bas-Leia.
Right, meaning Dina because Dina, she's Dina Bas-Leia. Yeah.
A good father almost in any situation. So why is this a surprise?
Not.
Okay. So again, that. So I guess the question is, which one of these is it? Is it that Yaakov is weak? It's a possibility. Is it that Yaakov doesn't care? Or is it that Yaakov is waiting for the boys to come home so he could turn the tables on Chamor? Right now, what is he supposed to do? Chamor is holding all the cards. And Yaakov is 108 years old. And he's going to take on Chamor and Shechem. So those are our three possibilities. It is important to try to understand how the sons read his silence. Now, besides the fact, the obvious one is, if she was Bat Rachel, it'd be different. But also, do they view his inaction as weakness? Or do they view it as he's biding his time? So what happens? Pasuk Vav. Vayetze Chamor Avi Shechem El Yaakov Udaber Ito. Now the psukim, the only thing that I did on these makoros is I purposely broke up the psukim where I did to try to give us a sense of like the plan, the counter argument, and all that. So Chamor comes Avi Shechem El Yaakov Udaber Ito. Uvnei Yaakov Bau Menesadeh Kishamam. But the Bnei Yaakov have just come back from the field when they heard. Vaitatsu anashim, they were very upset. Vaichar lahem ma'od, and they were very angry. Ki nevalasa b'Yisrael lishkav ebat Yaakov. A disgrace was done b'Yisrael. But that's a really important word because they're not Bnei Yisrael, they are the Bnei Yaakov. That's what the pasuk says. But they feel... Okay, this is their perspective. Vaychar lehemo, they were really upset. Why? Ki nevalasa b'Yisrael. Because something disgusting was done b'Yisrael, lishkav et bat Yaakov, to rape the daughter of Yaakov, v'chein lo yaseh. And that was not done.
Yisrael is like a region, a geography, or is it a nation?
A nation. We know Yisrael is the national issues. But by the way, it's Bnei Yaakov. So it seems to be all the sons, not just the Bnei Leah.
Yeah, there's
well, at least they're a group.
Right. They as a group, they're on the same page, and they say that but even so, we'll see that some voices are louder in the group, and some voices are more militant, and other. Right. Yeah, but it is the third question tonight is to try to figure out why is it that there is they say ki nevalasa b'Yisrael as opposed to nevalasa b'Yaakov.
To say it's within our family that's not there, it's one thing, but they're developing the sense of like this is these. They know that all the Nebuahs and whatever. We're a nation now. It's a small nation, but we're going. And we have to start thinking like a nation. And so
but they weren't called Israel.
But they're like 11. Right. They're just a big. They're just a big family. There's just 11 of them.
But they're not. B'nai Yaakov is children of four different women with the same father.
Okay.
B'nai Israel is a unity. I think it's a different...
And when they're,
okay.
It could be
when
a different
acting as one unit, then it's the beginnings of a nation.
And this, it doesn't say they said this. This is the narrator.
Yeah.
Right, but the the narrator is
saying this is B'nai Israel or Israel.
Well, the narrator is sharing their feelings. Okay.
They choose the word Israel over Yaakov.
Right. Okay, but I think that's an important question as to why that is the case. Okay, so what happens? Vaydaber Chamor itam lemor. Chamor speaks them saying Shchem b'ni chashkanav sho bevitchem. So Shchem, my son, desires your daughter. Tnu lau
Also, why do it chem? It's only one person's daughter.
Right. So he's addressing all of them as though she's their daughter, even though it's only one of those. Yeah.
Is Dina back with Yaakov?
No.
She's with Shem.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really the perspective of the brother is like, it's not a really easy negotiation, which is why I think it's fascinating what they say, right? That their answer is pretty bold. When she's locked up in a house somewhere, right? Like, they don't really have much to negotiate. But they say,
except for the raping, she's not being mistreated.
Right, I mean, she's loved. Yeah. So. Right, yeah.
Why do we assume she's locked up?
You think that they brought her, that he brought him to the table?
You think she's back? But she's still over there.
Right, the cop,
Right, I want her as a wife, meaning that right now I recognize, Chamor says, that the union between my son and your daughter, that's not a marriage.
I'm talking about the
Tanu Na'ot. Well, but I think that's it. Tanu Na'ot Talo Le'isha. The giving is that she should become a wife as opposed to right now. And the truth is, by the way, the Torah ideal, which I've always found to be very troubling, is that when a person rapes a girl,
they took back Dina. It's in Pasuk Chafei.
Right, no, I know that, but I'm saying the question is, where is she right now? Like, is it that Shechem brings her to the table?
Well, it's 3 days later. It's 3 days after negotiations. It says they kill out the city, they kill Shechem and Chamor, and they take Dina.
I know, but I'm saying right now when they have this face-to-face meeting, is Dina locked up in the castle, or is she does she have a seat at the table? And he's like, okay, great, we made a deal out. I'm gonna take her back, and we'll finish everything up later.
So you think that they brought more than
15
armed people to the negotiation?
No, I don't think that the girl was there.
I don't think the girl was there either, because you got 12 people in this room right now, and whoever they're coming, Shechem and Chamor, if she was there, she's not leaving.
Wait, you think Shechem and Chamor came by themselves?
You think they brought 30 people?
He was the king of king of his little village. Whatever.
He went to do a proposal. I don't know if he came with everybody to Yaakov's tent.
He was a clan chieftain, and he wasn't going anywhere without armed guards.
I kind of can't tell you one way or the other, but I'm feeling much more where Henry is.
I know, but I think it would have been 12 on 12. I don't think it was 12 on 2.
Yeah, but his 12 guys might be...
If Dina was just there, and these brothers are all furious, you really think they're just going to let him walk out with Dina? Again? Without a fight? No way!
No. Because there, any women didn't have a seat at the table.
First of all, they didn't... Even Shimon and Levi didn't do it as a fair one-on-one, let's do this, let's go. They waited until the third day of the
meeting. Yeah, because there's only two of them. And it was the whole city, because I don't think the whole city came into Yaakov's tent.
They were the only two that acted, but they had other brothers they could have brought with them.
Right, which is not clear from the story, one way or the other.
But I don't think Dina was there.
Okay, so...
I agree with you there.
Fine, so my son wants her as a wife. V'itchatnu otanu b'noteichem, v'itchatnu otanu, we'll get married to you, b'noteichem titnu lanu, we'll give you our daughters, v'benoteinu tikchu lachem, and our daughters you can take. So basically what they're saying is, you're in the you're in the driver's seat, right? V'hitchatnu otanu, not itanu, with us, but like, what? Right, and then we're giving to you, and you right. We're giving you everything that we have, and you could take anything you want from that. So in the relationship that they're proposing in Pasuk Tet, the power broker is certainly the Jewish people, not them. V'itanu teishevu, you'll live with us. V'aretz tzia lifneichem, and the land will be before you. Shevu scharua ve'yachazuba, settle it, do business there. And be you'll grab hold of it. That's the proposal. Now I want you to, when we read Pasuk Yud Aleph, I want you to tell me, please, if you feel that Yud Aleph is a continuation of Hamor's plan, or like does Shechem go off script? So Vayomer Shechem el Avi Avalachem Hamtzachem beinechem asher tomru ayla ayeten. Right. So Shechem says to his father and his brother, and to her father and to her brothers, I hope I can find favor in your eyes. Whatever you want, whatever you tell me, I will give you. Harbu alai ma'od mohar matan etne kasher tomru elai tuli ad nar elisha. I will give you lots of money, lots of presents. Just give me the girl as a wife.
It's off script.
Yeah.
It's
ad lib.
Right.
So
he's a kid.
He's got a bad.
He's a kid. He's got a bad. And the father, who's impartial, is doing the initial negotiations. And this kid's emotional and attached, and he screwed up.
Right. So Hamor envisions a merger between the two families that will benefit all. Although in his wording, he kind of makes it clear that the bigger benefit is going to be for you, because I'm giving you the upper hand to choose what you want to take in this relationship. But I think Shechem sees it like from a different perspective. Shechem sees it as a chance to buy his mistake, right? To pay for his, you know, his mistake, or to buy his desires, right? Like what blank check, whatever it'll take, I'll give you in order so that, like, we can be free and clear. That's what it seems to me. So what happens? Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayanu bnei Yaakov et Shechem et Chamor aviv b'mirma. So the Bnei Yaakov answers Shechem and Chamor, b'mirma. Now, what does b'mirma mean?
Trickery.
Sharpness. Wisdom. Right. So we have the word b'mirma also by the sale, When Yaakov takes the brachos, what does his father say? Yitzhak says, "Ba'achicha b'mirma." Your brother came b'mirma. It seems like, what does mirma there mean? Right. Your brother conniving. Totally deceived me.
Conniving.
Right. And yet, what does Rashi say there? No. Bechachma. What he did was, it was such wisdom.
It is, but that doesn't mean that Rashi does not agree that it isn't conniving. You've got to be pretty smart, pretty clever.
But it... Yeah. Right, but Rashi seems to like...
It's evil, but it's brilliant.
I hear. I don't know that. Right. I never thought Rashi that way. I kind of thought that Rashi was sort of like giving him a pass on it.
Yeah.
Like, what wasn't so bad?
It was necessary.
You can look at the news. One person's trolling, so another person's deception.
Right. So here the question is this what they're doing? Is this bad or not? And the truth is, what was their plan? Did they have a plan when they do this? So vaydaberu. They spoke to him in wisdom or in trickery. Because that had defiled Dina, their sister. Sorry. We can't do this. We will not allow our sister to marry someone who has a foreskin, right? Someone who's uncircumcised. Cherpa hilanu. It's disgusting to us. Ach v'zot ne'ot lachem. This is our one deal. Im tiyu kamonu limo lachem kol zachar. We are happy to merge with you if, and only if, you'll give a bris milah to every zachar. V'natanu epinotenu lachem. V'yashanu itchem v'ayinu l'am echad. And if you do this, what's going to happen? We will give you our daughters and your daughters, v'pnotechem, and your daughters, nikach lanu, we can, you know, we will take. V'yashanu itchem v'ayinu l'am echad. We're willing to become one nation. V'imlo tishmu eleinu, this is, to me, the Yud Zayin is a very powerful pasuk. V'imlo tishmu eleinu, but if you don't listen to us, limo, to do a bris milah, v'lakachnu et biteinu v'lachnu. We're going to take our daughter and we're going to go. Chutzpah. Where do they come off saying that? Right? She's locked up in the castle. How are they getting her?
The castle? This is like more like a village?
Whatever it is. Say. You get the image.
Yeah, right. You get the image. It's not like they're taking on a city of God knows what. They're taking on this place, you know.
Bitenu over here is our singular daughter?
Oh, no, our daughters.
But
that's what I'm saying. The deal's off. It's not that we're going
to... Wait, which one? You thought Bitenu?
I'm asking.
Bitenu.
Our singular daughter.
Yes.
So it's specifically Dina.
If it was multiple daughters, it would be Benosenu.
Which is interesting, the pasuk before they switched it on them.
Well, because they're talking about, it's all about. All of our daughters, they're yours.
Yep.
Which I don't know even how many daughters they have, according to most.
This is not such chutzpah, because the whole premise of this thing was saying, we want to work out a deal. What happens if we don't work out a deal? What's the implied of the deal? I'm going to say, I'm keeping your daughter? Then what am I negotiating with you for? If you're saying, no, your daughter, if there's no deal, you get your daughter back. Well, then that's what they're saying. If there's no deal, we're taking our daughter back.
It's a crossing negotiation. I think you just say, this is the fourth arrow it's going to go.
Right, of course, he could very easily, and maybe they're smart enough because they know about Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? Shechem kind of like put too many cards on the table. He's like, blank check. And then they're like, all right, well then
Who is representing the Bnei Yaakov? Who is speaking here, and when did they formulate the plan? Because
they must have taken a sidebar.
Behind the scenes discussion about, okay, we're going to get them to all circumcise themselves, and then 3 days later we're going to go kill them all.
So that is a very good question. Did they... So one possibility is that they had like some conversation. They knew what happened before they got home. It wasn't like they come home, they're whistling as they're walking in, you know, like, hey, Dad, we're exhausted. Wait, hold on. Why is he here?
Yeah, but they didn't know that Shechem's going to put this on the table like that.
Right, but I'm saying, like, did they begin to have a conversation? How are we getting her back? And then they did, like, you know, the typical, like, you know, thing that people do, like you have like scenario A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and it could be that one of them was like, hey, let's kill the whole city. And then the other one was like, ah, that's a good idea. And some of the other brothers might have been like, not loving it, but like.
It certainly sounds like they're united. The presentation of these subjects, it's not like there's one collective voice.
Well,
it sounds.
The one voice that's not collective is Yaakov.
Right, you said that. Yaakov, I agree.
Right.
Right. So Rabbi Grumet has an interesting analysis where he says that like the smarter senior generation kind of gets knocked out of the picture here because Shechem like derails his father's plans with Pasuk Yud Aleph, and the brothers kind of like they sidestep Yaakov and make a pretty strong point of who's doing the negotiating. Now, was Yaakov available? Did Yaakov hear all this? Did Yaakov know this? And again, like, did they really have a plan? Was it originally the plan was like, all right, if they all convert, like, we'll get along? Or was it, which is unlikely, or was it, okay, like, when they all get a bris milah, there's going to be like a silence for a little bit, and then we'll swoop in and we'll take Dina.
Or their plan was to do a surprise attack. Like, we'll make it like everything's great, hunky-dory, bris or no bris, and when they're not expecting it, we're going to go in and slaughter them in the darkness of the night and rescue Dina. And now all of a sudden this thing presents itself. Well, let's try this one. Hey, they get a bris milah, we're going to have a cakewalk on day 3.
Right. So, but again, what did they plan on doing on day 3?
No, well, originally, like, was it the next night? It may have been that night.
Yeah, but I'm saying, was it like surprise attack, or was it like and kill the whole city, or was it like we're just going to take her and, like, leave.
No, I mean, they had to punish the Novel Asabi Israel. I mean, that's...
They all got circumcised.
You know, just had this thing with Esau, this confrontation with 34-year feud that in the mind, and there still is a confrontation, and they have to be dealt with. They don't have this hanging over their heads for the next... Whatever. Now, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it.
Okay.
Maybe they weren't playing conversation at all. Maybe they were expecting a no.
Why
don't you get circumcised?
But what would have happened? Like, let's just say, Greg, that they would have said no. Now what?
Well, we just had it. We said, if him lo tishvu aleinu, lihimov lakachnu esbitenu valachnu.
Great.
We're going to...
Okay, so let's... You're all the brothers, right? You say that, right? Get a bris milah. Not happening. All
right. Tomorrow on the battlefield, we're gonna settle this thing. That's what's gonna happen.
Third option, I guess. But
all right.
Or tonight, we'll see you, but we're not gonna tell you about it.
Right. No, I'm gonna tell you tomorrow at noon. High noon. I'm coming in at midnight.
Yeah, I don't know. Somehow, I don't think that they have like. I think that it's like that pasuk bothers me because I think it's like empty words. Like, I don't think, I don't know what would have happened if, like, the brothers would have said, if they would have said no. Maybe it probably doesn't matter anyway because it didn't happen. But I don't think they would have been like, you know, like, okay, so the brothers would have said, okay, we'll give her to us. And Shechem would have been like, no. All right, like, have a good one. I don't know, I guess that's how I always pictured how it would end. So pasuk yud chet, vayitvu divrayim b'nei chamor v'nei shchem ben chamor. This is a really good deal for them because chamor and shchem are like, whoa, we didn't think it was going to come off that easy. We just need to get a bris milah. V'lo eichar anar lasot adavar ki chafetz bevat Yaakov v'hu nichmah mikol beit aviv. So the boy did not hold back one second because he really wanted the daughter of Yaakov and he was the most respected in his father's house. Vayavo chamor shchem b'no al shari ram. So they come to the city gate, Vaidabrul and Sheiram Lemur. They speak to the people of the city saying, Ha Anashim Aleb, these people, Shleimim Heimitanu, they're at peace with us. Veshu Ba'aretz Vischaruota, Ba'aretz Hine Rachva Yadayim Lefneyem. The whole land will be ours. They'll create lots of opportunity in business. Epinotam Nikach Lanu Lenashim. We will take their daughters as wives, but benoteinu nitein lahem, and our daughters we will give to them. Wow, that's a change, right? As opposed to where Shechem and Hamor said to Yaakov and his sons, you guys will be the power brokers. What are they saying here? They're turning to their people, the whole city, and they're like, guess what? You guys are going to be the ones to hold all of the power. It's just one little catch. One little catch. If we want them to be liot la'am echad, to be one with us, we have to get circumcised just like they are. Everything that they have will belong to us. And then they'll stay with us. So, they have to sell this to their people.
Right, so I get the daughter's part. How do they get the possessions? By getting bris milah. How is that? Where did that come from?
So there's two ways. There's like merger. I guess there's two ways to merge, right? You have like two companies that are like on equal footing. They merge. And then somehow in the naming, it incorporates both of them. And the corporate structure perhaps holds. You take some of the, you know, top people from both companies and you merge the company into one large company and their culture becomes one, right? That's like one way of doing
it. So you're saying that this was a communist type of community where the wealth of the community belonged to the community as opposed to a family?
No. Meaning like that's one way you can merge, right? But like then, here's another way. Like, I don't know, once upon a time, I was a Washington Mutual bank customer. And then Washington Mutual went under, I think, in 2008, right? And within like 6 weeks, I got new checks. They all said Chase. Right? The Washington Mutual stuff was probably burnt somewhere, thrown in the garbage. It's as though it never happened. Washington Mutual was wiped off the face of the planet.
That's not parallel to this.
No, it is because... no, that's exactly... it is. No, because that's what he's saying. He says to... Shechem says to the brothers...
Wait, why would... why
we're going to become one big happy family. They'll be the Yaakovs. They'll be the Shechem people. We're all going to be friends. We're all going to be equals. And not even really. Because we're going to what? We're going to give you the upper hand. But now he turns to his own people and says, no, no, no. This is what's going to happen.
I know, but the possessions was never in it.
So I have an idea for that. What he's saying is we're going to give you...
Like, on what basis? That's what I don't get.
Through marriage.
He's going to have these people slice themselves in parts. He's going to make up something.
No, I see it differently. He's telling them, we're going to give you our daughters. That means it comes with a dowry. This guy's got a lot of animals. He's going to take our daughter and give you 30 sheep. That's how it worked.
That's not the way the dowry goes.
Why not?
The woman comes with the dowry. When I give away my daughter, you're saying when he gives me his daughter, they're going to give me the sheep.
Be,
oh, I got it. He has lots of daughters? All right, maybe.
Our families are going to mix, and his stuff is going to become our stuff.
I don't know. I think he's just making up stuff. And he's doing
he is, but I think when he... Right, no, that's the point. But when he sells it to his people, what he says is, look, let's just do just a numbers game. There's 11 of them. And we're a whole city. Now, what a whole city means is that 100 families, is that 1,000 families, I don't know. But if you have 11 boys and a whole city, if we're the ones that have all the power in terms of the marriage and whatever, in one fell swoop, they'll all be... they'll be absorbed. Thank you. They'll be absorbed into our families. Meaning, it's not a hostile takeover. It's not like we're gonna like kidnap and whatever. Right, true.
Yes.
But it's whatever. We're gonna wipe them out. But it is interesting that and Rashi points out that what he does beautifully is he sells it to all the people the way he needs to. They hear it the way that's pleasing to them. Yaakov's sons supposedly hear it in a way that's pleasing to them. He thinks that he's doing a good job. The problem is that he's double dealing. And when that happens, the brothers probably aren't stupid. And the brothers probably get wind of that. And that might impact some of what they do. So now let's take a look at Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Well, I think it's... No, but I think that when they heard that, or they probably assumed that that was going to happen, I think that impacts a little bit of what they do. Here, I hope to be able to show you that in the next chunk. Vayishmuel chamor vel shchem kol yotz beno kol yotzei shari ro vayimol kol zachar kol yotzei shari ro. So everybody went and got a bris milah. So Shchem and his father really did a good job. Vayivayom hashlishi. Biotam koavim, on the third day when they were in pain, vaykhushne ben Yaakov, Shimon Levi achei dina ish charbo, Shimon and Levi by themselves go with their swords, vayavo al ir betach vayargu kol zachar, and they go on this city when the city is comfortable and they're secure, and they kill all the men. Bet chamor vet shchem beno argu lefi charev, shchem and their chamor and shchem his son they kill by the sword. When they take Dina from the house of Shechem and they leave. They then go and they plunder the city of the people that had defiled their sister. And they take everything. And they take all their families, their children, their wives, and their homes, and everything in it. So here's the question. Why do they have to do this? I get why they kill the men. They kill the men because they'll say that justice has been meted out. Shechem is a rapist. He deserves to die. Hamor is sort of in on it. He deserves to die also. The city sat idly by. She was kidnapped in the city. She probably screamed. Nobody answered. And so what ends up happening is they say...
That's a tough one. If the king does something, you don't really stand up to him.
I don't know. That's a good question. Or do you stand up for what's right, even?
So you get killed by the king, you get killed by the guy, sister, the whatever.
Like I said, once we kill the king and the prince, we gotta kill everybody, because otherwise we're
not gonna kill. Well, not if they thought that the king and prince was wrong.
No, but, well.
I don't know.
So, I mean, most of the Mefarshim say that they deserve to die because they stood idly by. It's if the king does something that is so morally corrupt, the expectation from God is that one will say something. Whether that's realistically to happen or not, that's the moral expectation that God has. So, they kill the man, I get it, but why do they plunder this city? So, Rabbi Grummet says, they do this because they wanted to be very clear. This deal was never okay. You can't buy your way out of a situation like this, right? Like, you tried to kidnap our daughter. You raped her, and then you thought, like, you could buy your way out of it. No, I'm sorry. That's not acceptable. That's the first one. And the reason why they loot this city, says Rabbi Grummet, is mida k'neged mida, because Chamor planned on doing the same thing. Now, he wasn't going to do it directly. He wasn't going to be plundering, but that's what we said in Pasuk Chav Gimel. And the parallels are there. It's all the same stuff. The animals, the people, and whatever. Fine. So that's where we leave off. But then, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon v'Levi, achartem oti lavisheni v'yoshev aretz, paknani paprizi, v'ani metem esfav, v'nesu alai v'ikuni v'nishanti ani v'eti. So Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, you messed me up. You made the waters dirty for me by doing this. I can't believe it, right? You're running the risk of me possibly dying, me and my family. And then they answer, they said, what do you mean? How could we have done this? Our daughter, our sister, is not a prostitute. That's how she was treated. Okay. So we go through the perek, lots of psukim, lots of questions. But I think the big piece to try to understand is, okay, what's going on between Yaakov and his sons here? Right, like this back and forth and the power play. What exactly is going on here? So, two possibilities. The first possibility is that Yaakov actually emerges stronger from this story, because he's the first of the covenantal fathers to actually tell off their child for doing something that's wrong. Avram is a Yishmael. He never says anything to Yishmael. He eventually chases him out, but he doesn't do anything. Yitzhak has an Esav. He never says anything to him. Yaakov is willing to say, Shimon Levi, you messed up. Okay. And that's a good question. Maybe yes, maybe no. But it's in contrast to David HaMelech, because David HaMelech has kids, and what does the Navi tell us? The reason why they behaved the way they did was because he never told them off. And that's how Adoniyahu could be an Adoniyahu, because he was good-looking and his father never said anything to him along the way. That's one possibility. But perhaps there's a better answer. And this is the idea that Rabbi Grummet shares. Yaakov's kids were annoyed at him, because they say, Yaakov, you're going backwards. Right? Like, we saw you for 20 years, you were weak by Lavan. Lavan took advantage of you, Lavan bothered you, and you never stood up, you never did anything, you just let yourself be pushed around. And then finally, at the end of last week's parsha, what did you do? You stood up for yourself. You said, Lavan, you can't push me around. This is not fair. This is not right. And you pushed back. Mazel tov, right? You finally did it. And then you come to Esav, and you were ready to fight Esav. And they might not have realized the fear that Yaakov had. And you stood up to Esav. But now, Vechrish Yaakov al Boam, they interpret, why were you quiet? You were quiet because you were weak. You were quiet because you're going backwards and becoming the Yaakov of old. They say, you're Yisrael now. Yisrael is from what? Saritai melukim vatuchal. You fought with an angel and you overcame it. You became strong. So Yaakov says, it's true. But understand that Yisrael has another meaning also. And that meaning is yashar. right? The idea that you are straight and honest and on the right path with God. Yaakov says to them, it's true, I might not be prepared to be a tsar right now. I might not be prepared to be super strong. But your behavior is the Yaakov of old, the Yaakov of Bimirmah. He says, I don't want to be like that anymore. And so for the first time in a very long time, perhaps for the first time ever, Yaakov says, I'm going to defer to be Yashar, to do the straight and right thing. And I think that's going to mold who he is going forward. And so I believe that the message of these psukim is the idea of the transformation from Yaakov to Yisrael. And that's why the brothers say, Vayichar lahem ma'od ki nivalasa b'Yisrael. This is not how it could be Yisrael. The problem is that they misunderstand what Yisrael is. They view Yisrael as, right, might and strength. It's true, there's what to be said about that. But it's not by itself. It has to be matched with the idea of Yashar. Yes, you're a tsar. Yes, you're strong. Yes, you have to stand up and you can't be pushed around. But you also have to do it b'yashrus. And that's the back and forth between Yaakov and his sons here. And that's what Yaakov tries to get across to them. Now, in the end, as much as he stands up to his sons, once they say what they say, Yaakov backs down, perhaps because he realizes there's nothing that at this moment he can say. But Yaakov does store it away. And at the very end of his life, he comes back to it. Perhaps the reason why he does that is because he can't go to bed. He can't die without clearing up this little piece, which he feels is an element of Yashrus that's missing. And so on his deathbed, he goes back, circles back to Shimon Levi one more time and says, Acharta moti, you did muddy the waters for me. And now I need you to know that you did the wrong thing. And with that, when he does that, I think he perhaps feels that he's closed this chapter.